Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today. I'm Bob Zanussi, the Chief Investment Officer of Real Estate Securities and Income Solutions at Delaware Investments. Today, the topic of our discussion is investing for income, but check the warning labels. There's four areas that we'd like to review today. One, and the first is reaching for yield and its consequences. Secondly, focus on valuation and not yield is the only factor. Third, yield is just part of the total return equation. And then lastly, the importance of dividend growth. So as we are all too well aware, savers have been forced to walk out the risk spectrum and reach for yield. And I constantly hear from investors asking for equities with the most bond-like yield. And this path has led them to seek safety in yields that historically were investments designed to protect capital with minimal growth. But unfortunately, with the Fed's actions having rendered fixed income yields too low and forcing this unusual behavior, those bond-like equities, which I'll refer to over the next few minutes, namely utilities, MLPs, telecoms, and certain REITs, are now unsafe and very expensive. So investors are now investing in the highest yielding stocks and wrongly assuming that that will satisfy yield, safety, and total return with no downside, which is a very tall order at this point in the cycle. In addition, investors have mistakenly concluded that the highest equity yield will protect in a bond sell-off, and yet quite the opposite we believe is true. These utilities and MLPs and certain REITs are far more bond sensitive to rising rates and thus will react quite negatively if treasury yields rise. In addition, investors are chasing yield without a full understanding of the security-specific risk they are taking. Equities are priced with a semblance of growth embedded into their stock price, and if there's a disappointment, even with a high-yielding equity, the downside could be considerable. Investors need to understand that by chasing the most bond-like yield, they are chasing at higher prices, accepting lower returns, and in fact are increasing their risk. So as investors in income-generating securities, our belief is that securities are income-generating securities are a vehicle to use to maximize total return. And to maximize total return in this universe, we believe that valuation is an obvious prerequisite in identifying the best risk-adjusted income securities and not just yield alone. In fact, all investors should follow this tried and tested formula. And those investors that are seeking the highest absolute yield are then, by definition, we believe, placing valuation in a secondary position and undoubtedly will suffer capital loss if the environment were to change. So in our valuation approach, dividend yield is just one metric. But more importantly, dividend growth is far more critical as those securities can grow dividends will outperform the highest yield utilities, MLPs over most periods of time. And so why is this true? Initiating or increasing a dividend is a very loud corporate statement. And managements and boards spend significant time and effort in understanding the future of the business and its ability to generate increasing cash flows that can be paid out to investors in the form of dividends. So thus, when a firm initiates a new dividend or an increase in the existing dividend, these decisions are for the long term and cannot be reversed in the near future like a stock buyback. So if the dividend is cut or the growth slows, investors will accordingly punish those stocks. The highest dividend yielders are high for a reason. Managements do not have better alternatives and thus will pay out more of the dividend to shareholders. So on its face, it may seem more attractive. And so why invest in a company that's business isn't really growing and thus has less flexibility to add value and pays out all cash flow and dividends? Investors should understand that a company that cannot increase dividends has a lower quality business and is more interest rate sensitive. Thus, our approach has performed very well due to strong asset allocation up and down the capital structure without having to chase the highest yield. And because we haven't been chasing the highest yield, we are in a position to continue outperformance due to our belief that we have better growth characteristics than our peers, namely dividend growth. Thus, we believe that a 3% yield is better than a 5% yield. So think about that. A 3% yield is better than a 5% yield. Why? Because the 3% yielding portfolio will have more capital appreciation due to potential dividend growth. One other important factor about dividend investing is the underlying cash flow quality. So let's take a utility that has a 65% payout ratio. The payout ratio is just the dividend divided by the net income. So 65% is very high. And they have a debt to capitalization ratio of 60%, which is also very high. You contrast that with the average S&P company with only a 32% payout ratio and a debt to capitalization ratio of only 25%, far lower than the utilities. Companies in the S&P have lower debt, thus less risk. And with a lower payout ratio, they can increase dividends at a higher rate than a utility. And this is important because if interest rates rise, companies in the S&P can increase dividends and grow at a rate above inflation. So what does this mean? Today, utilities offer a 3.5% yield with only 1 to 2% dividend growth. We're finding companies with the same or higher yields, but with dividend growth of 8 to 10%. With that kind of dividend growth, the market will award the dividend growth company with a higher stock price, and thus, and here's the kicker, better total return. The utility has less growth, higher debt, and cannot provide investors with the ability to fight higher rates. In the end, the underlying cash flow quality of the S&P 500 companies is far superior than utilities, MLPs, and telecom stocks. So you may question as to why should I count on a lower dividend yield with growth when I can get a higher yield today? And that's a fair question. In the March 18th edition of Barron's, they published long-term total returns of each of the S&P 500 sectors. It was over 23 years. And at the bottom, not surprisingly, were utilities and telecom with 7.5% and 5.8% total returns respectively. Our argument has been to invest in more competitive yielding sectors such as healthcare, consumer staples, consumer discretionary, industrials, and technology that have provided total returns far higher in the 9 to 11% range on an average annual basis. An investor is wrong to think that dividend yield is the only source of returns over time. By investing in utilities and MLPs today, that's what you're doing. Given the expensive levels of these high-yielding sectors, it's time to de-risk and actually think about lowering your yield to less expensive and safer income equity. Two additional reasons for our concern about chasing yield. In a speech just 2 days ago, Fed Chairman Bernanke, to our surprise, finally realized the risk in chasing yield. His comment was, quote, "watching closely for instances of reaching for yield and other forms of risk-taking which may affect asset prices in relation to fundamentals." Really? This comment is rather late and surprising since his policies are directly causing savers to chase yield. And lastly, companies and consumers are re-leveraging. As the debt to cash flow is rising for corporations and consumer saving rates are plummeting as well, another reason that risk-taking is back, and much of that has flowed into high-yielding income-generating securities in the market. Again, buyer beware chasing yield. Historically, less than 10% of equities in the S&P 500 had a yield that was higher than the 10-year Treasury note. Today, 55% of the S&P 500 has a yield higher than the 10-year note. And this is very important as it shows, at least with this factor, stocks are cheaper than bonds. In addition, there's plenty of upside in terms of dividend growth, as we have mentioned previously. We are confident dividend growth will occur as the payout ratio for the S&P is only 32%, and that is a 70-year low. So given slower growth in the economy, more companies will pay out in the form of higher dividends. However, there is some tension between investors and companies on this topic. So think of it as like couples therapy and one of commitment. Managements don't want to get too involved in anything serious like initiating dividends, while shareholders want a lifelong bond, which is consistent dividend payments and growth. So as the couple's walking down the aisle, and it's a long way to the altar with plenty of distractions along the way, but eventually they get there, and the reward is an increase in the payout ratio, which improves the risk-return profile of equities and enhances the performance of the asset class. The reason we are confident payouts will rise is managements are responding to what the market has been rewarding. And in the U.S. large-cap market, companies raising dividends have outperformed. CEOs are no different than most of us, seek out the endorsement of their peers, other CEOs, before making the tough decision of parting with their precious cash. But given they are shareholders as well, their peers' equity prices are rising. I know they will follow in kind. Lastly, in the above comments I've made, I've focused on high-yielding equities. However, just as important is the income chase in investment-grade bonds, high-yield bonds, and now more recently, bank loans. Although we are investors in high-yield bonds, they are the most equity-like fixed-income security, and in a reflationary, not inflationary, but reflationary environment, they will provide positive returns, whereas investment-grade securities are no longer providing a positive real return, and that's the key, real return, after inflation. So in addition, investors year-to-date are buying bank loans, and wrongly led to believe that bank loans will protect against rising rates. First, rates are not rising as inflation is subdued, no wage growth. And second, high-yield bonds are performing better than bank loans year-to-date. Lastly, the credit quality of bank loans is inferior as those loans or the large investment banks don't want on their books. And if they don't want them on their books, why would you want them on yours? So that's the end of our discussion. I'd like to thank everyone for participating in this Delaware Investment Call Series event. I encourage you to visit our website at DelawareInvestments.com for replay information and a rich collection of other sources. Thanks again.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the presentation, and you may now disconnect. Have a great day.